Good morning. Welcome to the Lone Peak Public Safety District meeting on January 14th. Thank you for attending. I assume we do a roll call vote for the minutes. So we'll start on the right.
So, Madam Chair, so we actually, the first item on our agenda is the appointment of the chair position. Actually, the minutes are a couple items down, if that's okay.
Oh, I just meant that we do a roll call vote to say we're all here. Do you guys
Oh, you're all here. I'm sorry.
And then we can go to our first.
I apologize. I misunderstood
number
you.
Number one. Yep. Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, do you guys not do that? You just say Brittany Bills present.
Brittany Bills present.
Carla Merrill present.
Oh, Carla, are you not going to do it?
What?
We always do this at our meeting. I'm following your example.
No, I just said it.
Oh, I didn't hear you.
I said Carla Merrill present.
Kim Rodella present.
Brett Rumler present.
And Christy Hanneman present. Okay, we'll move to our first call. I did the call to order, and the invocation will be by Brittany Bills.
Our dear Father in Heaven, we're so very grateful to be gathered this morning to discuss the business of our two cities and how we can best work together. We're very grateful for our staff who spend the time preparing, for the board members who spend their time, and mostly for our public safety and for the time, attention, and the care that they put into our communities. We're grateful for this opportunity to have discussions today and pray that the Spirit will be with us, that we will make good decisions and have good conversation. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Okay. Item number one, appointment of the chair. I think we need a motion.
I move to appoint Chrissy Hanneman as the chair of the Lone Peak Public Safety Board.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mayor Bills and seconded by Mayor Merrill. All in favor? Or do we do a roll call vote? Roll call vote starting again with Brittany.
Brittany Bills, yes.
Carla Merrill, yes.
Kim Rodella, yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Thank you. This is my first meeting, so we will exercise a little bit of patience to understand the protocols. Because everybody runs a little bit differently, but I'm familiar with Robert's Rules of Order, and after that, it's very individual. Okay. So, do we have any public comment or unscheduled public appearances? And for my reference, will I be given a card in the future if there is unpublic anyone here?
We haven't normally practiced that, done that practice, Madam Chair, with comment cards, but okay. Honestly, we don't typically get members of the public here to comment.
Okay, great. Okay, so we've passed item two, or we'll go on to the audit. This will be presented by Steve Rowley with KNC CPAs. And if you'll come to the stand. And we've been given a copy. Thank you very much. I still live in the paper world. I spend 40 hours looking at a screen. So I really appreciate getting away from the computer.
Definitely. Thank you. You can tell I'm on the tail end of a cold. My voice hasn't realized that I'm done being sick, so bear with me a little bit there. My name is Steve Rowley. I was the engagement partner on the district's financial statement audit for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2025. My responsibility here is to return and report to the board on how the audit went. Even though we work directly with staff and management, we are hired by the board to do the audit, and we are required to return to report back how that went. So any concerns or questions or anything like that, we can have that direct line of communication and make sure that things get addressed if they need to be. So we'll jump right into the opinion, which is on page one of the report. So I guess probably two pages down from there. And so the very top section is the opinion on the financial statements. And it's that second paragraph starting that states, in our opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the respective financial position of the governmental activities, each major fund, the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance, budget, and actual general fund report of Lone Peak Public Safety District as of June 30th, 2025, and the respective changes in financial position for the year then ended in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America. For any of you English nerds out there, that is one single run-on sentence. But what that states is these financials are materially correct. It meets all of the requirements for the state auditor's office as well as any lease or debt or bond holders. it states that these financial statements can be relied upon. So that is our opinion. The rest of the couple pages of this report talk about what is that basis for our opinions. How do we come up with those conclusions? Well, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes as opposed to just the numbers that you see here. We have to, as auditors, we have to plan and perform the audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and government auditing standards in order to perform the necessary tests that we can get the necessary evidence, what we call reasonable, my mind just went blank. sufficient and appropriate audit evidence, that's the term there, so that we can give those conclusions. So that evidence comes through looking at confirmations with outside parties, whether that's debt confirmations, receivable confirmations, looking at supporting documentation from vendors, third-party discussions, those types of things. It also comes with sample-based testing, so that statistically, the test work that we perform, it gives us sufficient confidence to say that these financials are materially correct. So as part of all of that work, we come to these conclusions that the financial statements are materially correct. There are a lot of standards that have to be complied with. There's a lot of normal accounting standards, and then the government accounting standards throw some additional loops in there for us just because it is. But at the end of the day, these financial statements are materially correct, so that's very well done on the part of staff in preparing the financials and maintaining the records of the district in an appropriate manner. The responsibilities are kind of twofold. I discussed what we as the auditors are responsible for. Management is responsible for the day-to-day operations. They're responsible for maintaining the internal controls, which are those processes and procedures that help ensure that the money coming in is being recorded properly and the money going out is being recorded properly and going to appropriate vendors and paying for things that are appropriate for the district's purposes. So all of that is the responsibility of management. As we look at the district and its internal controls, we do look at those controls to determine the scope of our testing. We do not give an opinion on the internal controls, but if there was any weaknesses in those internal controls, those would be discussed and brought up so that improvements could be made. If you jumped to the end of the report and got your spoiler already, there is no findings. So we'll go over the other two reports shortly, but very well done on the part of the district. The bottom part of this first page in the opinion starts a bullet point list of some items that the standards specifically require that we call out. So as auditors, we are required to exercise professional judgment, which means we have to verify everything we're being told. We cannot take at face value answers to questions that we inquire about. And the second one also is important, I believe, in that at least to call out in this meeting, is that we are supposed to identify and assess the risks of material misstatement. So as we look at the district as a whole, we look at those operations, as I mentioned earlier, we look to see, are there any areas where there's a weakness or where something could go wrong? And if something could go wrong, is that a significant weakness or a material weakness that would potentially cause the financial statements to be misleading or incorrect? So as we plan and perform our audit, we do consider risks of material misstatement to help make sure that we add additional procedures in areas that may be considered a little weaker or maybe need a little extra support. The rest of that information is certainly for you to read through, and if there are any questions at any time, either during this meeting or afterwards as you sit down on your Friday night and start reading through the audit report, feel free to reach out with email, phone call, whatever it may be. I'm happy to help answer any questions there. We're going to skip to the end of the report. There's a couple reports towards the end. So pages 38, which is probably about PDF page 42 or 45, I would guess. Yeah, a couple more after that. Okay.
Did you say page 30?
38.
38, sorry. Okay.
Yep, perfect, right there. Okay, so this report talks about the government auditing standards reporting requirements. So there's the regular generally accepted auditing standards that most private companies have to follow. And then because we're a governmental entity, we have additional standards and responsibilities both internally on the accounting side as well as the auditor side. So what that means for the auditors is there's additional procedures we have to perform because of the government entities are focused more on transparency and accountability to the public as opposed to a regular private business. And so some additional procedures are required for us where we look at laws, rules, and regulations and contracts, covenants, those types of things to see if there's any non-compliance with that that could have an impact on the numbers. We have to consider those as well. Even if it may not have any kind of legal ramification, if it has a potential impact on the financials, we do consider those. So that's part of what government auditing standards requires. Additionally, this is the standard that requires that we communicate any weaknesses in those internal controls over the city's processes. And those would have to be called out here if there were any. So as we look at this report, there's two sections to it. The top section talks about the report on internal control over financial reporting. So as I mentioned earlier, we looked at those controls to determine how much testing was necessary or where any weaknesses may be, but we do not give an opinion on those internal controls. Our report states, however, that in our testing there were not any weaknesses or deficiencies identified as a result of our testing. So we have no findings, no concerns with the internal controls of the district. There's been great improvement over the several years of the district's efforts in improving financial reporting and maintaining internal controls. And so we applaud them for their efforts there, and as well as the board for your oversight and encouragement to make sure that that happens. The second part of this report is on compliance and other matters. So that's where we talk about any laws, rules, or regulations that might have an impact. If there was any weaknesses or errors there, those would be communicated here. As a result of our testing, there were no instances of non-compliance or findings for that. So again, very well done on the part of the district. On the next page, we jump into the state compliance report. So the state auditor's office has a state compliance audit guide where every governmental entity is required to undergo some level of testing on specific compliance areas that they are concerned about. The areas that were required to be tested this year are those indented towards the top, so budgetary compliance, fund balance, fraud risk assessment, and Utah retirement systems. So as we look at each of those areas, there are two parts of this report that we look at. We look at the specific instances of compliance. So we perform tests of the budget to make sure that you're within budget. We look at the fund balances, make sure that you're in compliance there. The fraud risk assessment, this year we actually had to look into, I'm sure you've all been part of filling out that fraud risk assessment where you go down and give yourself points for how strong your control or fraud environment is. This year we were required to go through and verify all of those points, which was a lot different than previously. So it was a lot more stuff that, I'm sorry, staff had to pull a lot of information for us to verify that. But as we go through all those testings, if there was any weaknesses or errors in terms of complying with those would be reported here. And we do give an opinion on the compliance related to the state compliance guide. And as it states there that the district complied in all material respects with the state compliance requirements referred to above for the year ended June 30th, 2025. So A-plus on the compliance, well done. The second part of this report, well, the rest of this report talks about how we came to those conclusions, and it's almost word for word of what the audit opinion is, so you're free to read through that if you'd like. I figure we'll save time and not take a nap mid-morning. The second half of the report, so on the next page, talks about the internal controls over those compliance requirements. So we look at the internal controls, which are those processes that the district has put in place to help ensure that we're staying within budget, for example, or that we are only claiming the points on the fraud risk assessment that we actually should. So as we look at those internal controls, we look to see if there's any weaknesses or failures in terms of that. And as we state here, there were no weaknesses identified in looking over the internal controls related to the state compliance. So again, very well done on the part of the district. And because that's the last page, that means there are no findings or no items of discussion. A few things we do just like to go over. We did have no difficulties in working with management, no disagreements. We appreciate all of the hard work that the staff does in preparing. It is no easy task, and it's not only accounting that deals with this. A lot of the state compliance stuff deals with a lot of different individuals, including board members when you have to get your training and things like that. So it is a team effort to make sure that an entity can get through an audit unscathed. So we appreciate all of your efforts, and that is my report. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'll just make a few comments. I didn't introduce myself very well, but I am also a CPA in the private sector, so we are now preparing for our audit in February. So you have a lot of extra work, though, as you mentioned, to go beyond just the financial representations, but to meet all the contractual or community, like the state laws and all the things that apply to a government entity above and beyond a private entity. So you pointed that out, and that was good to, I mean, it was a good reminder since I don't have to deal with that in my work life. I did have a couple questions. How long have you been our auditor?
That's a good question. I think I started working on this audit when I first came out of college and started working, so that was probably about 15 years ago, I think.
Okay.
And then in terms of being partner over the engagement, probably the last 7 years, I think.
Okay. And do you do other governmental entities as well?
Yes. As a firm, we probably audit around 40 to 45 governmental entities.
Wow.
And we consult with probably another 40. So the majority of our practice is government, whether auditing or consulting. I don't work on any non-governmental entities, for example.
Okay.
So government accounting is my life day in and day out. We don't do any taxes at our firm, so I don't even have to split my attention between taxes as well. So, yeah.
Okay, you specialize right out of the gate. Okay, that's good to know. And then I did want to, I read the previous audit report, so that was your firm that was doing that we had findings or like corrections that were made. And so now this year we did it, and so David was, you know, we need to pat him on the back that everything was good this year. So that was good to see. And then what was the last thing? You mentioned the state risk audit, and is that a new requirement that you said you had to step up your investigation into that?
Yeah, for the fraud risk assessment previously, I think it's been on the state compliance testing circuit for probably 4 years or so now. But this last year, because the state auditor's office has identified that many entities were claiming points that they shouldn't have been claiming, they now require, well, previously we only had to see that the fraud risk assessment was filled out and that it was presented to the board or council. And then that was the extent of our testing.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the state auditor's office required we go down each of those lines and verify what support the district had to claim those points. So if it was the segregation of duties points where you get the majority of the 200 points, do you really have those separations? Well, we already look at that as part of the audit. But then the other, so if there was a conflict of interest policy, was that policy present? Was it approved by the board? Was it put in place? Even if the entity is claiming somebody has a CPA license or 40 hours of education, we had to verify you do have a license, you do receive 40 hours of education each year, and what were those classes taken? So it was much more in-depth this year than before. And frankly, as we've gone through and audited a lot of government entities with this, there have been a few that have claimed the points that they shouldn't have. Most of it was just due to a misunderstanding of what the state compliance requirement was really asking.
Yeah, there's a lot of lingo in there.
There is.
So you did. This is just my last question. I didn't realize, as far as being a CPA, a lot of them are dealing in the private sector. So in the state risk audit assessment, do you get points for that, or is there a governmental certificate that is more applicable?
For in terms of like the CPA
like,
realm?
I know that they put that on, like you said, like, is, how do I want to say this? Like, the CPA were very much focused on, like, the private sector.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So is there another certificate that they value more at, from the state level, what do they value more?
They really don't seem to value anything different in terms of that. There are some other credit, or I guess maybe not accreditations is the right term, but there's a few other certificates you can receive. There's like a certified government finance manager. That's one that they hold. I think in terms of the fraud risk points, that's kind of an unequal measure.
All equivalent. Okay.
And there's a few others. I think there's a certification from, I think, the AGA, the American Government Accountants Association, something like that. That's listed also as one of those that will allow you to get points there.
All right.
I think there's about three or four there.
All right. Thank you. That was very insightful. I usually have the most questions, but does anyone else have any more? Okay.
Thank you.
And any from our administration? No. Okay. Thank you. Nice to meet you. Okay. Moving on. We have a consent agenda with the minutes for the last four meetings. Can I take a motion, or are there any corrections or comments?
I can do it. I move to approve. Sorry. I move to approve the meeting minutes for October 30th, November 10th, November 19th, December 10th, 2025 of our regular meetings and the work session.
I'll second.
Question on the motion. So the consent agenda actually includes items 4B and 4C as well. Do the board members have a question, or do you intend to approve all of the consent agenda?
I'm sorry, what was that? I missed the first part.
You're okay. The consent agenda includes minutes as well as
she just asked
two more
for
items.
The
You're right, it was my
meeting.
Yep,
so
I was just going one thing at a time. So you can do it how you prefer. There's item B, which is the purchase of a new fire administration vehicles, multiple it looks like, and the approval, surplus, and disposal of other equipment.
Are you guys not surplusing the side-by-side?
We are going to surplus side by side. Not today. I got to get approval to buy a side by side first. Mm-hmm. So we're efforting that currently. Unless we want to just wing one. I'll make a motion.
You can't. Sorry. Out of order.
Do it.
Okay. Would you like to amend your motion to include all A, B, and C? Or...
Yes, I move to approve the items on the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call vote.
Brittany Bills, yes.
Carla Merrill, yes.
Cameron Adela, yes.
Ron Rumler, yes.
Okay, the motion passes. Item 5, approval of contract for legal services for Lone Peak Public Safety District. We have a new legal advisor. And would you mind coming and introducing yourself to the rest of us, especially me, since I'm brand new? And I don't know if anybody else has had a chance to meet you yet, besides those that interviewed you. So,
my name is Walter Bird. I'm currently the Salem City Attorney, so this is kind of a sidelight gig. So just excited to be here. I live in Springville, have four kids, so... It's a good time in my life. Grandkids coming, so excited about that. But I'm excited to be here and work with you, the board, and staff on any issues you may have. And as I can see, this operation runs pretty smoothly. And they're judging from the audit letter I had to write, there's not been any problems. So hopefully with my help, we can continue with that. So
very good. And can you give us a little bit of how long have you been in governmental... I don't know what the word is. I use governmental accounting. What's the word you use for?
Government, yeah. Government.
Okay, government.
I graduated law school in 99. I was employed by a county in 2001. So I've been in municipal or county government for 25 years, essentially.
Awesome.
So a lot of experience. Hopefully I can be a benefit to this entity, so...
And will you do you attend every meeting? Is that the setup?
I think that's the intent.
We felt like that would be best for Walter to be able to be here and get a feel for what we do as a board. And then the way we've set up the contract is Shane or I can call him if we have questions, or the chiefs as well, to just get his legal advice on contracts or personnel matters or anything in that regard.
Okay.
So I'll speak to Walter. Applied amongst some other candidates, and we felt like Walter was well qualified, and we interviewed Walter. So I'll say Shane, myself, the chiefs, and then both mayors, and excited to work with him. So make that recommendation to the board.
Thank you. So you went through a process, and we're just getting the tail end of it.
Yeah, and I've submitted a contract, and I think that's what's
awesome
to be reviewed and approved today. So
Thank you for sharing that. Now, do I call you Mrs. Wells or Administrator Wells, or what's our formal name here?
Erin.
I was going to say that I think that everybody calls me Erin, so
okay.
We're all less right. Formal that way.
Okay. Thank you for that background, Erin. Any comments here from board members? Okay. We can go to the next agenda item.
I think we need to make a motion.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so, and I'll accept a motion.
I move that the Lone Peak Board approve the contract for legal services with Walter J. Bird.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call vote.
Brittany Bills, yes.
Carla Merrill, yes.
Kim Rodella, yes.
Brenton Romler, yes.
The motion passes. You're the one taking those minutes. Okay.
All right, where are we on next?
Right, I think we're on number six, so are we not?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, this is number six. Okay. Number six is 2013 Pierce Transport Engine Payoff Option. So I believe we will be turning the time over to David, or is it Erin?
Yeah, I'll start off on this one. Thank you, Madam Chair. So a few years ago, it was 2.5 years ago, the board approved the purchase of a ladder truck. We finally were able to obtain that ladder truck and get lease financing for it. In relation to that, at the time, part of the presentation was that staff's intention was to, once we have that ladder truck, to sell one of our other pieces of equipment, the 2008 Pierce Transport, right?
Tower,
sorry. And with the proceeds from that sale, pay off another lease on a piece of equipment, 2013 Transport, to decrease the lease payment line item in the budget to make room for the new lease of the ladder truck. Hopefully that all made sense. That was the intent when that was presented to the board 3 years ago. So this item is following through on that. We have surplused that 2008 piece of equipment, and now we have the option to use those proceeds to pay off the 2013 lease financing of the 2013 Pierce Transport Engine. The payoff would save us about $750 in interest, so that's not a huge concern, but it really is just clearing up space in the budget so that that line item, instead of, I think the lease payment on the new ladder truck and other engine that we are leasing at the same time is around $260,000, so this would keep that at that level instead of raising it to $310,000, $312,000.
Is this all happening in the same fiscal year, so it's there's no movement of fund balance, like the surplusing and using the proceeds?
Remember, what was the date that we sold that tower?
It was in, I mean, in the
yeah,
fall.
I think it
it's
was in this,
I mean, it's
yeah.
in this current fiscal year.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. It's all contained within this fiscal year.
Okay. Yeah. Just, I know we're talking about fund balance somewhere.
Yeah.
So I just want to clarify that for myself. Okay. Sounds like the board has been moving in this direction for more than 1 year, 2 or 3 years it's taken, and we're at the end of a process. So, any questions or comments? Okay. I need a motion then.
I move to that the board approve the early payoff of the 2013 Pierce Transport Engine in the amount of $101,564.30.
I'll second.
Okay, we'll take a roll call vote, starting with Brittany.
Brittany Bills, yes.
Carla Merrill, yes.
Kim Rodella, yes.
Ron Rumler, yes.
Okay, the motion passes. All right, let's go to number seven, which is our department reports. I think we'll go in the order listed here. We'll start with Erin and then hear from our police chief is not here. Is there a substitute?
He's actually present online, so when it gets to him, he will pipe in that way, Madam
okay.
Chair. So yes, I'll start us out with the administration on department reports. I just wanted to kind of give a reminder to the board where we're at. Madam Chair, you mentioned a couple times we're, you know, at the end of a long process, and this is one of those as well. When the board approved the fiscal year 26 budget, it was approved to hire an additional fire position, meaning two full-time and one part-time position, right, or one person, right, to equate to one position in the fire department. But that approval was subject to, so the cities have already been paying assessments for that, but it was subject to the ILA being reworked. So Highland approved the ILA change, it was in December, right, and then Alpine just approved a change last night. There was a slight tweak where Alpine asked for the fire formula to be set for 3 years. And so Highland will approve or will consider that item next Tuesday at our first city council meeting. And assuming that that goes through on Tuesday, then the fire department will move forward as was previously directed with the hiring of that new position within the fire department. So I just wanted to keep the board up to date on that and as a reminder where we're at there. And if there's no questions about that, I'm going to turn the time over to David to start talking about fiscal year 27 budget, right? Now that we've wrapped up 25 in the audit and we're getting close on 26, we're going to look ahead to fiscal year 27.
Okay. So, yeah, we just wanted to take this opportunity. January is usually our kickoff month for budget season. So we wanted to show some information related to the budget. First of all is the calendar. This hasn't been sent out to everybody yet, but it will be sent out shortly. As you can see, today is the first date on that calendar where you receive the fiscal year 25 audit presentation. Normally, if we had mid-year adjustments for you, we would bring them in this meeting. We don't have any proposed this year, so we don't have to worry about that. And then this meeting is also meant to be somewhat of a budget prioritization and goal-setting meeting. Really high level, we just want to kind of get a discussion, an idea from the board of where their priorities are for the year, what their goals are for the year, and what they want to see in the budget. Obviously, we're just getting into the process. You haven't seen, requests from the departments yet, but just kind of in general where you are and what you want to see happen this year. Other meetings, so the next meeting we have will be in March. We're not meeting in February. So March 11th, we'll have a budget work session where we will have a draft of the proposed budget to distribute to you and to present. Following that, we'll schedule individual meetings with each of the board members where the administration and the board can meet one-on-one and discuss the requests from the departments. And then the next meeting, April 1st, we will hold a public hearing, and the board will have the opportunity to discuss and vote on the tentative budget. Following that, over the next week, between the 14th and the 21st, both Alpine and Highland City will hold their individual council meetings where the full councils can consider the tentative budget that was hopefully adopted by the board. And then finally, on May 13th, our scheduled meeting that day, another public hearing, and then the board will have the opportunity to vote on the final budget and any budget amendments from the current fiscal year. And then if there's any changes to the fee schedule, those will also be presented and voted on in that meeting. So we can go to the next slide. Any questions before I move on about our calendar, what to expect?
Is there a reason we're not doing the 8th in April?
I think we've gone back and forth. What was the reason, Aaron, that we had to?
I believe that's Alpine School District's
spring break. We debated going back and forth between the next, not the 8th, but the whatever 15th or the 1st, and I think it worked better for the board on the 1st, was my recollection. Well, I remember this conversation, Chief, from last meeting. We were worried about timing, pushing it back to the 15th, and so we did the 1st. But I think, like I remember, Mayor Merrill was going to be out of town, but we said, let's put on our calendars for the 1st, and if we're not ready, then we can bump to the 15th. I'm guessing you're going to be out of town.
The 15th or the 8th? Don't we normally meet on the 2nd Wednesday?
We do, but that was Alpine School District spring break, and we normally try to avoid that just because a lot of people are out of town. And so we debated between the 1st and the 15th. We've landed on the 1st, but maybe we might need to reconsider.
Because is it Alpine that meets on the 14th? Because the meeting where the city needs to approve the tentative budget.
That's right.
Is before the 15th.
We might need to follow up further about that April 1st.
But you guys aren't going to be approving it until the 21st, so it's not before the 15th of April. It's before the end of April.
But
so we can approve it on the 28th.
Alpine City could approve it on the 28th?
Yeah, we have two meetings scheduled in April.
I think our concern was just the time between tentative and final adoption.
Just making it short. Yeah. Can staff circle up about this, and we will send you a follow-up email, whether it's April 1st or April 15th, if that's okay. Are there conflicts? I know Mayor Merrill had a conflict on April 1st. Were there conflicts on April 15th for any board members?
Personally, having done budgets and stuff for many years, it is always good to allow a buffer for unexpected things, and so I prefer to, just from my experience of putting it earlier, especially the public hearing. Is there a reason the first is a problem? I guess I'm not following that. I missed that.
I'm going to be out of town.
Oh, you're going to be out of town.
I mean, do you need to be there?
What's up?
Do you need to be there?
No, not really.
We actually have a couple staff members who are going to be out of town. So let's look at
On the first.
Is the 15th spring break week, or is that the week before?
No, the 8th is spring break week.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's important.
Yes. We'll see if the 15th can work. We'll look at the calendar again and see. But you're right, Madam Chair. I think we were worried about the compressed timeline if we bumped to the 15th. So we'll confirm that we feel like it can really work and then send a follow-up email to you all.
Yeah. Personally, I don't have children in the Alpine School District anymore, and so I avoid doing anything on spring break because it's usually busier than any other time. So I'm here, but I'm just one. I'm not the most important either. So, okay. Meaning I'm fine on the 8th. But anyways, let's go on.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So then we just wanted to bring up some topics. So we've discussed these a little bit in the prior meeting. But just a reminder that we do have a large fund balance currently. We talked in the last meeting about kind of how we got here. We've had a request from one of the board members to dive in even deeper into that. So we're going to look at that and see if we can determine how much of this fund balance was due to one-time things and how much was from, you know, budgetary practices that may be an ongoing issue. But the bottom line is that currently we have about $3.5 million in our fund balance. And we don't necessarily... You know, it's up to the board what their comfort level is of how much they want to have in fund balance, but that it does seem like a high amount for a district of this size to have just sitting in our accounts. So we had we talked last time about some potential uses of the fund balance. First, starting with fire, they have about an $840,000 fund balance. And we feel like staff has come together with a pretty solid plan on ways to use that equipment that the fire department is needing to purchase and has been planning to purchase that has been discussed with the board previously and that the board has previously approved. And the current fund balance that we have provides a funding mechanism for a lot of this equipment. With all of that, I'm not going to go through each one individually, but it's cutting off the bottom, I think. The fire department would have approximately $265,000 left over in fund balance after all of this equipment is purchased. And I apologize that our slide is not showing up fully, but no, there's supposed to be a bottom part, but that's fine. Moving on to police, this is where maybe there's some more question about what should or can be done with the existing fund balance. The board previously approved the use of $200,000 of the balance to purchase some vehicles in this year, but there is about $1.7 million remaining. So that's one of the discussions throughout the budget process that we'll want to discuss. What level of funding of reserve balance is the board comfortable with? Can we move some of this money into a capital equipment type fund to save for future capital? Or is there a scenario where the board prefers that to bring down the fund balance that we look at some type of a refund to the cities using the formulas that the cities paid into the assessments? So kind of all of those are on the table. It's something that will be discussed during the budget process. And then in administration, there's about an $830,000 fund balance we've previously discussed as the ILA change, as Aaron noted, will be voted on by the Highland Council next week. If that is approved there, then there is the option as we go through the budgeting process to easing into that change for the city and using some of the administration fund balance to kind of rebate the cities to help make the transition to the formula change. Did we have another slide? I think we might have taken it off. So we also, I think in the agenda, mentioned rent. Rent will be another discussion during the budgeting process. There's been question of whether rent should be charged. So for those that maybe aren't aware, the district pays both Alpine City and Highland City rent for the fire stations and then for the public safety building. So there's just been question from the chiefs, from board members, whether it makes sense to continue to charge that rent, because obviously the cities then are just increasing their assessments to pay the rent that comes back to them. And it's not necessarily a one-for-one. It's not a wash for each of the cities. There is currently Highland gets a little bit more in rent revenue than what they're paying in rent, and then Alpine's the opposite. So it's something that will be discussed. We considered bringing numbers to you to see what that would look like, but then kind of last minute last night found something that we want to research and make sure that rent has been charged and collected correctly. So investigating that, it'll be a topic for the future. And that's all I had. Aaron, did you have more?
Hey, David, as part of your looking at the rent process, will you also check to see what other districts do that share resources like we do?
Yeah. Yep, we can reach out to people.
All right. We're happy to take any direction. I know that this is a lot and some of you are new, so if you have any direction or input on what your thoughts are on fund balance, we're happy to take that now, or we'll have staff will prepare an option for you to consider that you'll see in March when you see the budget, basically. Or if you have thoughts over the next month or two, we're happy to get emails or have conversations with you as well.
Okay, I usually have the most comments, so welcome to my world. I noticed the way it was broken out into the departments that the funds are actually fungible. Like, they don't, this is an internal decision how to allocate them from year to year, to assign them into these buckets. In governmental accounting, you have what's called restricted funds, and those are like legally from external parties, how you, like, what you can do with them is dictated by law or contract or something else. But then if it's internal, it's just designated, and so these are designated. So that's an internal decision that has been made here, and like I am new, which I think is healthy, but in a way is a little bit unhealthy, because we don't have, these are wiggly lines, per se, the blue, or colors, I would say. So if we have needs that need to be met, like the thing we voted on in the Alpine District to use some of the fund balance to transition to a different funding model, the administration has designated it would come from the green section, but that's just internally. Like, that's their recommendation, and it's totally appropriate. But I just wanted to point that out, that our fund balance is fungible, meaning it can be used to pay different things. So that, I just want to make that point, and it's really a policy that we can adopt and follow their lead, or we cannot. So just let you chew on that. And then the other thing in looking at my first meeting I attended was on December 10th, and we're using the fund balance to purchase equipment, which is a perfectly good, suitable way to use it. But it would be advisable to also create a capital improvement fund, which is what they're advising, and I'm supporting both of that recommendation because I feel like there's a way to plan ahead for vehicles. And, like, I know that there's, like, a 5-year schedule for things that need to be bought. I don't know if it's the same on the police. Is that right? Yes. So that we can plan ahead and say, well, in 5 years we could pay for half of a tower truck, or we could pay for an entire fleet of new vehicles or whatever, using fund balance or using our capital fund. But then we have some years where, like, it didn't turn out as well. The budget's not always as, you know, going to turn out this well every year. We've seen an increase just right here from 1 year to the next is pretty sizable. I saw the transfer was like $800,000. Is that about right? That it increased? I'm just looking about. Anyways, and some years it doesn't increase that much. Like 1 year, if you look between 2021 and 2022, it actually, you know, we had to use our fund balance for operations. So it's not predictable that we could always fund capital improvements using like the budgetary measures that David's talked about. But I do think it would be healthy for us to designate money rather than designate it by department, or we could, anyways, that's an option, but definitely designate some of the fund balance. And David, I think in a different conversation said we would actually have a completely separate fund, like in our financials that's just for capital improvements. And I think that that would be wise. And so those are my two comments, just to support what they're being proposed. Again, am I the only one with comments? Any other direction?
I agree with you, especially, you know, the capital expenditures is, especially that we have a schedule of what we need in the 5-year, 10-year increments, and so this is something that we should look into.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great idea.
Yep. See what we can, how many needs we can meet through operations and see how it goes. What was the other thing? So I know that they're going to pass repass the interlocal agreement, and you've talked about that. One of the reasons I was actually the one who made the motion to hold it for 3 years is I feel like it has been disruptive to, like, you've had a lot of meetings talking about this stuff. So to hold it stable so we can create some stabilization, really, of, like, not just funding but the whole district was the intent, and the Alpine Board did support that. So when the Highland people are here, Aaron can represent that, but when the Highland mayor and Kim, when you're talking to your council, if you could, and I see at least two other council members here. I know you by face. Sorry, I don't know you by name yet, but that was part of it, is this has been a rocky year from, and I haven't been on the board, but just from what I'm hearing, and so my perception, and so we'd like to, you know, create a more stability and see if that will just make it less rocky. How about that? Less rocky. Okay. So all of that has to do with money, and money is not the most important, but if we can, like, you know, have a predictable, consistent, being an accountant, what you want is predictable, consistency, transparency, all of those things lead to trust. That's the whole point of an audit. That's the whole point of sharing all the numbers in a public meeting. All of this is to create trust among the board members, with our employees, with the public. So it's important that we remember that's our goal, is to create trust and work on that. So that was a long speech, but this is my area of expertise. When it comes to trucks or something else, I'm just going to be quiet. So, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So staff will move forward with creating those capital funds. So is our intention at this point. Those of you who have been on the board a while know that a handful of years ago we created a wildland fund, and that kind of changed the budget. And so this will be another change to that, where we'll have a capital fund moving forward. But we do feel like it's wise, and want to your point, Madam Chair, right, be trustworthy and also to be transparent and to be have best use of funds and have good plans for those funds, right? And so we'll move forward with that and bring back recommendations as to what exactly that fund looks like and what to do with fund balance at this point. So look forward to that. Next on our department reports, so that's all we had for administration. Other than when I follow up with you about the April meeting, Shane was just reminding me there might be some training that we need you guys to do. So we'll get that information to you as well if that's something. After administration, so police and fire, Shane and I asked each of them to give you a very high level preview of what they are thinking about for their budget and to get your initial feedback if you have it. But because you're not going to see the budget until March, right? We're not going to meet again until March. So we wanted them to give you a very high level preview of what they're thinking. If you have thoughts or comments now, we'd welcome them, or you can send them as a follow up. But don't have a lot of details yet, but wanted to start that conversation now. And I can't remember, Chief Patton or Chief Gwilliam, who goes first? Chief Gwilliam, are you on and available?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. Well, greetings from Georgia. We're out here visiting my son who moved out here just over a year ago. We're also celebrating an anniversary. So thanks for letting me dial in via Zoom. Again, as Aaron had stated, we just want to give you a high-level overview of what I'm kind of looking at for this year. So it's been 12 years since the police department has added any personnel to our full-time officers. My plan this year is to bring back a budget that includes two FTEs. One would be a supervisor or a sergeant that supervises the officers in uniform that are out on the road. He's the first line supervisor, then one additional officer to be able to take calls and be available for services to both cities. The other thing that I wanted to do in this budget, we talk about this every year and we've been able to maintain this, but to maintain a wage that allows us to keep the good employees that we have and be competitive. So those are my priorities in this year's budget. Just those two things, and at that, I'm happy to answer any questions or hear any comments.
Yeah, Chief Gwilliam, can you just briefly discuss the rationale, rather than just 12 years passing, has there been an increase in population, an increase in crime rates, or other things that justify adding those two new FTEs?
So we have actually, population has increased quite a bit in both cities, and so that's one of the reasons. The other one is, we live in a very good area. We maintain, and you guys, if you follow it, we're typically one of the safest cities, if you will, across the state year in and year out. We compete yearly with Santa Clara down in southern Utah for that top spot. We do are seeing an increase in calls for service, and especially as both cities grow and we have populations increase and the kids in the schools and continued calls for service for anything that may be criminal to animal control to unlocking a car door, our calls have increased. The crime rate is low. Again, we're one of the safest cities in the state, but we do continue to see an increase for calls for service. So again, the idea is to maintain a staffing level that there will be an officer available to answer those calls when they come in. And that's something that we'll be discussing over the next few months.
Okay, thank you. What I would recommend is you come with as much data as possible to help us make an informed decision. Maybe look at call volume over the years, crime rates, the types of calls, just to give us a better picture of why we might need additional personnel.
Yep. You got it.
Chief, this is Christy Hanneman. I had a second question. I've had more experience with car theft or mailboxes being explosives being in fire in mailboxes. There, I said it. And then the citizens have not always been pleased with, we watch way too much TV with the detective work. So could you help understand, is there just when you increase staffing, do we have a specific detective? Do we need training? Like, how is the actual crimes handled? And would the increase in staffing allow, like, a little bit? I'm not sure. That's a perception. You may, like, that could be disproved. But when we have staffing, are they always, like, on a beat? Or do we have someone that's at functioning on, like, solving crimes? Like, my neighbor, this is just very anecdotal, but the car was stolen off her front. You know, like, it was parked. The teenager had left the keys in the car. So this is like a crime of opportunity. And through looking at KSL and finding like just things that she realized where it was like trying to be resold somewhere and for parts. And so she like solved her own crime. And so this is a story that has gone through my neighborhood, which is, you know, a weird story. But can you help me with that perception that that we do have not just traffic and responding to emergencies, but what is our detective staff? That would be my only feedback I have for you.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And Sergeant Thurston's in the room, I believe, and he's the supervisor that's over the detective division. We have two full-time detectives that that work on solving crimes. Now, depending on the type of crime that it is, you know, you not knowing the details about your neighbor's vehicle and how that all worked out, I can't speak to that specifically. But when we do have crimes that occur, depending on the level of the crime, the officer that initially takes the call can do a little bit of follow-up and follow through if it's something that keeps him within the city, whether that's making phone calls or speaking with neighbors or gathering things that might be of evidence, ring doorbell cameras or right. Anything that may have been left behind at the scene that he can gather. Once that initial report is taken and the officers have left the scene, if it's something that can rises to the rate where we would have detectives look at it, they would then pick up that case and then move forward with any information that they might have, including the evidence. And then they would go back and re-interview witnesses or track down leads that would help them solve those crimes. You know, a lot of times we have the detectives do carry quite a heavy caseload. We only have two of them and then one sergeant, again, Sergeant Thurston there that carries a caseload as well that goes out and follows up on those cases. And so the idea is not to hire another detective with these positions, but to hire an additional officer on the road that can take those calls and then hire one supervisor that would be out on the road and provide supervision and overall direction to the officers that are on the road. That's one area that I, in my opinion, we're seriously lacking, and we could use another supervisor out on the road. But that's typically how those work, but we have, again, two detectives that are in-house that do follow up on criminal activity and work those cases, if you will.
So what I'm hearing you say is with the population growth, the need is to be out more, like, on the streets and dealing with those things. We've always had two full-time detectives for the past 12 years, and there's not a greater need, there's not greater crime. Because, like you said, we live in a very safe area. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, our bigger need is to be able to take those calls when those calls come in.
I see.
We do spend quite a bit of money in overtime. This would hopefully help with some of that. When I say spend the money, that's bringing officers to cover shifts that that might be vacant due to officers taking time off or the call in sick. And so we need to have officers that we bring in on an overtime basis to cover those vacant spots.
Okay.
Yeah, Chief, having that data as well, overtime expenditures would be helpful as well as we address this with our respective councils.
Yeah, and I think even if it's, I don't know what data you would bring, but why they are a priority, you know, a supervisor, you know, like this overtime all of that is just helpful. I think there's going to be, because of this change in the funding formula, it's caused a lot of consternation in our city. And so I do believe we will be answering a lot of questions that maybe we haven't had to answer before. So I think Brandt is right on that we're just going to need some data. So.
And Chief, you also mentioned that you have a sergeant who supervises the two detectives. Does that sergeant also carry an investigative caseload?
He carries a small one, but he does a lot of administrative stuff inside the police department as well. So he splits his time between those two.
So he's an administrative supervisor as well as a supervisor over the investigations?
Correct.
This is really nitty gritty, but you are, like you said, we're not going to have a lot of time. I was looking at the past budget, and there was a 12% increase in benefits, and then there was a 6% increase, I believe, in salaries. And I don't remember if we were talking about the police or fire, if they're equal. So when do you get your benefits changes, and do we as a district cover that increase, or is that a shared responsibility with employees?
Is that Aaron, can you answer that?
Yeah, I can speak to it. Last year was quite a high increase, unfortunately. We've tried to educate more on how employees can best use their benefits to reduce the increase expected this year, such as emergency room use. There were certain areas that the insurance company let us know that we potentially overused that caused the increase in premiums. One of them was emergency room use. So we've tried to educate the best as possible, but we are kind of, aside from shopping around, we kind of have to go with what they say. Currently, the district does pick up 100% of the employees' premiums, so it's not paid at all by the employees.
And we made a change 2 years ago to insurance companies because they came with a really high rate, and we shopped around. And so while there was an increase this year, was it 10%? I want to say for
12.
Health insurance. We didn't want to make employees change again, like after we had just done that. So again, trying through education to keep those benefits costs low.
So is that the district picks up 100% of the medical benefits? Do they do dental? Like, I know those are minor, relatively, but they like, I don't know what else you do. But do they do any part of it? Life insurance, I don't know, what else?
There's a basic life that's covered by the district, but then any supplementary life would be paid for by the employee.
That's something I didn't introduce myself well enough. I spent 8 years on the Alpine School Board, and that was a huge cost every year, was absorbing the increase in our medical, because like this district, the district picked up 100%. And as I stated, I work in the private sector, and that doesn't happen. Nobody does that. So it's just an adjustment in mindset. Just for the record, Shane and Aaron, is that consistent with what we do with our city employees?
Highland City employees pick up 5% of our medical premiums.
Okay, and Shane, what do? 100%. Okay.
I'm curious. My experience is in the federal government, in federal law enforcement, but also federal government as a total. And I know with me, I cover roughly 25% of my health insurance costs, and the amount that I contributed over my career to my annuity or my pension fund was also a percentage that I contributed. And that amount, as the federal budgets have gotten out of hand, the federal government has increased the contribution requirements for federal employees. That was grandfathered, so I didn't have to absorb those additional costs, but new hires did. I would like to understand better in the state of Utah what the standard practice is, what most municipalities do, what most districts do as far as asking employees to contribute part of their benefits. One aspect, what you mentioned, is the overuse of the emergency room. I think that's what they find with universal health care, is that when it's free, people go all the time and overuse those things and overburden the system and increase costs for everybody. So if there is some kind of copayment, maybe employees like me will think twice about, you know, can I go to the urgent care versus the emergency room, because it's much more expensive to go to the emergency room. Yeah. I would like to understand that better, what the standard of practice is in Utah.
At least in the private sector as well, the concept of an HOA. Oh, not an HOA. Come on, HSA. Thank you. Too many meetings in a row here. HOA was last night. Tonight is today is HSA. Like, really put the it's just a different option. Do we use an HSA here?
And yes. So there's there's HSAs or traditional that employees are able to select into. If they choose an HSA option, we do contribute towards the HSA because it's such a lower premium for the district in comparison with a traditional plan.
Correct. Okay. All right. Well, we will be talking about that. Just wanted more information. I did see that as a 12% increase is really big, and you can't really absorb that every year. It's not sustainable. So, okay. That was it. Oh, I did one more comment. I did meet with them prior, so I'm not just pulling this all out of thin air. But we were talking about, this would go to both police and fire, that compared to our other competitors when we're going to hire, they had thrown out that you like to stay right at like the median. So we're not the highest, but we're not the lowest when we're competing for like hiring new people, like entry level. So that kind of information, again, because our city is a little, you know, on alert because of the increase in what we're paying, that if you can have that data available, that would be great in the final meeting.
And absolutely, we want to provide that to you. And just to let the board know, we wanted to change how we've done that in the past. In the past, we've asked the chiefs to kind of go out and collect that data, but not that we don't trust anything that they provided, but to show, you know, that there isn't anything, the cities are going to do that. So we've asked the HR person to go out and get that data, instead of having the chiefs go and collect that this year. And so that presentation will come from the, HR, on that.
Awesome. All of that, the medical, the median, all of those things, that would be great.
Yep, we'll provide them
with an HR background.
I just want to clarify that analysis is going to be done will include benefit packages, not just salary.
I will do our best to get total compensation or at least give you some data on how much each city, as Madam Chair asked, how much each city contributes towards HSA. It's very, very hard to get apples to apples and make sure that I'm what one city is telling me is exactly what we do. And so we'll do our best to get as much of that information as we can.
I don't know what you would need, but the real question is it traditional or customary for municipalities to pay 100% of their employee benefits? And you said 5% versus 100. I mean, we're saying 95, 100, like we're all in the same ballpark there. You know, if that's customary, so this is, we're only talking about here today the police and fire. So if there's another, like the Unified District of Insult or something, I don't know how many districts there are that are just for public safety. But to me, that would be more apples to apples, but, you know, municipality is also good.
Yep, and we'll take a look at that. Just anecdotally, Highland looked into this last year as a part of kind of our whole salary conversation, and there was one outlier city who did about 75% is my recollection, but the others all did either 95 or 100%. So
okay.
From cities, but we'll refresh that data and bring it to you as part of the discussion.
Okay, it sounds like you've looked at it recently, so that's good to know. And again, just presenting, even a year-old data is still recent in my mind, if you don't want to redo the work you've
done. We'll get it up to date if we can, but at least present that information
to
you.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, we sort of jumped around. So is there anything more for the police chief? Okay. Nope. Then we have our fire chief.
All right. Hear me? There we go. I'm going to be basically more of the same. As far as wages go, just really trying to get to and trying to maintain that median, pay line. That does take into account four benefits. And Brent, just to answer your question, there is an out-of-pocket for the employee when they go to the doctor or whatever. It's not completely...
Oh, like a copay.
Yeah, copays.
I understand then.
You know, so...
I just pay 25% of my premium for my health insurance and the copay.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and I understand that. But and we do take that into account when we're looking at wages versus, you know, I think that's something that we... maybe overlook sometimes is, you know, people's targets. You know, if you've got a city that's targeting above median or 80% of average or something like that, as far as targets go, we are trying to, look at the entire compensation package when we're looking at wages plus compensation. So we'll be happy to not be trying to do all of that work, and we'll be assisting HR with their efforts to get all of that wage information. Really, probably the bigger conversation that we're going to have is last year in the budget, we approved one position, which was to go to 9, with the expectation that we would run 9 for this year, and we would have a pretty good idea of what that would give us as far as our manpower. You know, trying to fix our manpower to get up to those minimums of 4 per station. We obviously have not made that. So typically the SAFER grant, and what the plan was last year when this, you know, running it through the budget, was that we were going to fund this one position, and then we would look at if we needed to go to 10, which mathematically 10 is going to be the number, that we would look at grant funding to step into that 10th position. The last 2 years in 23, grant information became available in March. Last year, the 2024 SAFER, which is current, became available in May of 25. So we don't really know when we're going to have SAFER grant information as far as making a decision on do we want to write the SAFER grant. We will get that to you as soon as possible. And then that'll be a decision of do we write for the SAFER grant. I think it's the one thing with writing for the SAFER grant is if we do write for it and we are awarded, we need to not turn it down. So that's probably a decision that as far as writing for it, we need to be real cautious of. Other than wages, SAFER grant, we're excited to get, the position on, that 9th position hired and see where that takes us. We've got some GLs, just some minor things that we probably adjust, paper towels and whatnot, but other than that. And I'm happy to revisit that fund balance right now if we want to go for an impromptu side-by-side purchase. No? All right. That's all that I have.
Do we have a need to go into closed session today?
No, we do not.
Okay. I move to adjourn.
Second.
Is there a second?
I don't think so. Do we just do favor? Do we do second?
No, I moved.
Okay.
We just did the department reports. There's no closed session. The next step is adjournment. I move to adjourn.
Okay.
And you seconded?
Yeah.
Okay, it's been moved and
I thought you said you didn't second.
No, I did second.
I thought you seconded.
Well, then you looked at me weird, and I was like, oh, is there a second?
I thought that was you saying, no, I didn't second. I was like, you just seconded it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded by Mayor Merrill and seconded by Councilwoman Smith. No, I'm looking at the wrong name.
Rodella.
Whatever in front of me, I'm going to just say it. Okay, and so do we... just audibly, we don't have to do roll call vote on that,
correct.
Right? Okay. All, how do you say that?
All in favor?
Yes. All in favor. Thank you. I'm drawing a blank. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, aye.
Did everybody? I can't hear up here. Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you.